Welcome, Voltron fans, to 2015 and the first episode of the new year for Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast. I am Mark Morrell, your host, and joining me this week is, once again, Dan Jolly. Welcome, Dan.
Thanks for having me.
How you doing?
I'm pretty good. Pretty good. I am currently sitting in a hotel room in beautiful Novato, California. On the opposite side of the country from where I live, because I'm out here working on a video game for Hangar 13 Games.
Nice. Nice. Are you allowed to say what this one's about?
No, I'm not. They would string me up by some sensitive parts if I breathed a word of what we were working on.
But so is this early in the stages here?
Well, it's before they want anyone to know anything.
Okay.
But I can say that I'm very, very pleased with Dying Light. I was one of the principal writers on that. I'm responsible for I co-wrote the main story and then wrote all of the dialogue for the main story in that game.
Okay. How well is it doing?
It's doing very well. Doing very well. In its first week of sales, it had 1.2 million unique players.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all very, very happy. It's not post-apocalyptic exactly. It's post-zombie apocalyptic. It's set in a city, a quarantined, walled-off city that's been overrun by a zombie virus. And,
wow.
It combines parkour with zombie combat.
And you, as the player, you get to do a lot of parkour with your character.
Yes, yes. That is how you get around the city. And as you progress in the game, you learn more skills and can actually begin weaponizing your parkour.
Okay.
Sales have been good. Reviews have been, in general, pretty good. The work I did on it has not been to absolutely everyone's taste. I can safely say that, but, we're all really pleased with how it came out.
Oh, good. Good. It's nice to see some of your work being very successful out there.
Yeah, this is, I think, probably it's definitely the biggest game that I've been involved with.
Oh, terrific. Are you looking forward to a new year for Voltron and all the things that might be happening there?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm always looking forward to new things happening with Voltron.
Well, here's something that I wanted to share with everyone. Everyone who listens to Let's Voltron podcast doesn't necessarily they're not all on Facebook. Like, some people use Twitter, some people use Facebook, some people use both. But wanted to let everyone know that recently, Michael French posted his last update as the Voltron social media administrator, and I wanted to read this back to everyone. He says, "To the Voltron fan community, it has been an absolute dream and pleasure interacting with you all over the past year as the Voltron social media administrator. Tomorrow, February 1st, the torch will pass to DreamWorks, who have all kinds of new Voltron announcements throughout 2015. So it should be an exciting year for the fan base. Big thanks to Wep for asking me to act as the interim admin last year, as well as Jeremy Corey and Bob Koppler for the trust they placed in me. Thanks again, everyone, for making this an amazing year. I can be reached at Retroblasting for anyone who'd like to stay in touch. Big salute to you all, Michael French." And I just wanted to, you know, add on to that and say that, you know, it was great working with Michael French on the podcast last year. We did, you know, tons of episodes last year. We did a total of 35, and Michael was on a lot of them. And I just wanted to thank Michael personally through the podcast and say good luck with retro blasting. I know you're going to do a great job with that because, you know, there's more and more subscribers to that YouTube channel every year. So, you know, I look forward to also, you know, seeing what DreamWorks is going to be bringing us. So we also look forward to maybe having DreamWorks on the podcast sometime this year. What do you think about, you know, DreamWorks basically is taking over for the social media for Voltron? What do you think?
Seems pretty auspicious. I mean, if DreamWorks is getting involved, social media is hardly going to be where they stop.
Yeah, I think so, too. Sounds like this is going to be a multi-level campaign. I mean, there's going to be many different places where they'll hit us with Voltron, it sounds like.
Well, I mean, I don't think they'd be getting involved at all if they didn't have some really big plans.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know if they're considering a new TV show. It wouldn't surprise me if they were going to announce a movie.
Right, right. So, you know, we've also heard a lot of things that are going on, you know, business-wise for DreamWorks as well. So we're hoping that this segment of their business is doing really well with DreamWorks Animation, with all of the contracted stuff that they have to do for Netflix and everything. So we're hoping that Voltron becomes a big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we've got some episodes to go over here, and we are continuing with the same string of episodes that we had started with. We started with number one in the original series, Defender of the Universe. And now we are on episodes 17, 18, 19, and 20 we're going to talk about today. So with episode 17, let's get started.
Voltron will be back after these messages. And now, back to Voltron, Defender of the Universe.
The Golion title here is Challenge from Space. And the Voltron title is My Brother is a Robeast. So is there something you like to say just about the titles, Dan?
I like Challenge from Space better.
Okay.
Although you can't argue with My Brother is a Robeast. That does accurately represent what happens in the story.
Right. Well, as we find out, there's a character that is introduced in this episode that we have a lot of listeners to the podcast who love this character, and this is a character that comes back in other episodes as well. So it all starts off in the Voltron version with King Kova of Pollux. The planet's name is Pollux. He offers his son Avok as a Robeast champion for Zarkon in order to defeat Aris. Zarkon reminds him about Voltron, and first he wants to test Avok against the Robeast in the arena. Lotor thinks Avok has no chance against Voltron. Zarkon says he must prove it in the arena. Lotor thinks Avok is no match for this Robeast, and Avok defeats the Robeast, and Lotor is incredulous. So right away here, we have two different worlds meeting. We have Zarkon and the Drool Empire on Doom meeting with King Kova and his people from Pollux. And apparently, they both don't like Aris.
Yeah, yeah. And just a note about the names. I really liked what the Golion episode did with it was sort of a thematic thing, because the name of the planet was Heracles, the Greek version of Hercules.
Right.
And instead of Avok or Avok, the son's name was Samson, who was another classic person with another classic guy with immense strength.
Well, that would certainly explain why they're dressed the way they are. They look like Roman gladiators with the helmets and the tunics and all that kind of stuff. And they're mm-hmm. very strong and muscular.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the link between their planet and Eris I think bears out in a lot of the architecture that you see on Eris.
Right.
Which also has sort of a classic, like, Greco-Roman feel to it.
Okay. So here we are. They're in the arena, and Avik defeats the Robeast, and Lotor can't believe it. So Lotor challenges Avik himself, and as he gets him backed into a corner, he sees Avik's sister, Princess Romel, who looks like Alora's twin. And that distraction enables Avik to knock Lotor's sword out of his hand. Zarkon remarks how he's a fool that Lotor was distracted by a woman. So Avik tells Lotor to honor the agreement that they have, so Lotor has Hagar take him to her laboratory to make him into a Robeast. So we meet Princess Romel, and she looks exactly like Alora. How does that happen?
One thing, I might not be as precise with my timing here because the internet connection in the hotel here is not robust enough so that I can be watching these episodes while we're talking. Right. So I'm just sort of having to rely on my memory of these. But I don't remember. I know that in Golion it was pointed out that Heracles and
Altea.
Yes, of course. Yeah, Heracles and Altea were like sister planets.
Right.
And there was a royal disagreement there where a king had two sons, and one was peaceful and one was violent, and the violent one got banished.
Okay.
And in fact, the team remarks, to one degree or another, depending on which show you're watching, that Romel and Alora are more or less cousins. So, you know, the actual physical bloodline that's shared is really obvious there.
Right. So we are going to get to the part where I think Karan might explain that, or the princess explains that. Avik has a little brother, too, named Prince Bandor. And he's standing next to Princess Romel. And he is just proud that his brother will become a Robeast to defeat Voltron. So Lotor jumps into the crowd to introduce himself to Romel and escorts her for a tour. Well, Zarkon is pleased that Avik is now a Robeast, and once he destroys Voltron, they will destroy him. So whatever agreement these two worlds have, it seems like Zarkon has no interest in sharing anything with these guys. Hagar thinks that this will go smoothly and according to the plan if Lotor does his part. So she thinks the king is old and will be replaced by Prince Bandor, and Romel is nothing. She's not even in the picture. Lotor says she means something to me. Obviously, she looks like Princess Alora. Of course she's going to mean something to him. So Zarkon says he can have her after they defeat Voltron. So Lotor takes Avok, the Robeast, to planet Pollux. On Pollux, Lotor's ship lands at the royal castle where legions of warriors await his arrival. The warriors, like I said, are all dressed as Roman gladiator garb with the helmets, the tunics, and the swords. Now Lotor asks King Kova if he's anxious to see Avik the Robeast that will defeat Voltron, and the king says he's anxious to split planet Eris between them. Lotor says Hagar has made him their greatest achievement, bigger and faster than Voltron. He was able to absorb 10 million units of laser thermal rays.
Well, one thing I want to mention there, there are in fact two differences between the episodes. After you see Lotor leading Romel away, and then it cuts to Lotor's ship arriving, in the Golion episode, you get a caption several months later.
Okay.
And when Lotor arrives, he's got his harem with him. And that's where Romel is. You know, it didn't really... You don't get as much of a sense of it in the Voltron episode, but Lotor took Romel and made her one of his.
Wow.
And and has been having his way with her, presumably, for months and months.
Wow.
And, you know, it really casts the whole relationship in a decidedly different light.
Yeah, that doesn't feel like the Voltron version did at all.
No. No. And there's a scene coming up, conversation between Rommel and Bandor.
Okay. All right. At this point, the king asks if the demand for surrender was sent to Arrys yet, and his henchman says it has been done. Lotor thinks soon both princesses will be his. So on Arrys, Karan tells the Voltron Force about a transmission that came from King Kova of the evil planet Pollux. They want us to surrender or fight. With the help of Zarkon and his forces, we are fully able to conquer you. We will settle the long feud between our planets once and for all. So Karan explains that Pollux is Arrys' evil twin world, and legend tells how Arrys and Pollux were created at the same time. The first king of Arrys had two sons, one peace-loving, one violent. And before the king died, he sent the bad one to Pollux. Today, his descendants still carry that grudge. So Keith says it's time to make peace. Karan agrees and says he'll go with the Voltron Force. Alora says no, it's her duty as the royal representative. So the team agrees, and they all head to the lines, form Voltron, and head to Pollux. So there's a long-held grudge between these two planets, and I'm just wondering, as we go along with more and more episodes, if there are more planets out there that just really didn't like Arrys too much. Because it's sort of made out to be that you know, why would a peaceful planet like Arrys have been attacked by Zarkon and Planet Doom? And now we find out there's another planet that actually wants to do the same thing.
Right. Well, you know, I think Zarkon is, it's not just Arrys. You know, he's very imperialistic. You know, he wants to conquer as much as he can. And it seems like with Pollux, it's a very specific kind of personal grudge.
Right. Right. So when they get to Pollux, Keith remarks about how the orbit of Pollux brings them closer to Arrys once every 100 years. So it wasn't that long a trip. King Kova is meeting with his advisors, and they talk about how Zarkon is a fool to think they'd join forces. Their plan is to defeat Arrys and then get rid of Zarkon and rule the universe. Little did they know, Hagar's cat was watching.
That freaking cat.
That cat is everywhere.
Which is the whole point, but still, man, that freaking cat.
Yeah, so basically the cat has a little transmitter on his neck, and Lotor is able to see the whole thing as they're talking. So he knows of their betrayal the whole time.
We must keep the plan from Zarkon and Lotor. Kova thinks he's clever. Once he destroys Voltron, we will destroy him.
Transmitter on my little evil cat really comes in handy.
So Keith and the Voltron Force have landed, and they went underwater, and they were walking in the underground tunnels. So if they were trying to, you know, make peace with these people first, that didn't seem like the way it was going to be done. But
I was baffled by this. Yeah. I mean, in Golion and Voltron both, they're like, hey, we want peace. Let's just go and talk to them.
Right. And
yeah, let's go and talk to them. So let's get in our war machines and go and sneak into the palace.
But
armed and in uniform.
Right. Right. But Keith quickly explains this one. Okay. As they're walking those underground tunnels, he explains, well, if they had answered our message of peace, we wouldn't be sneaking around to find out what they're up to.
Yeah, in Golion, they never sent a message of peace. They just decided to go and sneak in.
Yeah. So Princess says they're going to attack my planet. We've got to stop them. And they find an invasion force with large ships. So they swim up to an area inside the castle and climb the wall using ultra grips found inside their belts. They've got all kinds of tricks, too, and we didn't even know those kind of things existed. But once they get inside, they run down the hall. Ramel and Bandor are talking about Avik and how he doesn't recognize Bandor at this point as a robe beast. But once he defeats Voltron, he'll turn back into a person again. I don't think Bandor knows the process here.
Well, that's one thing about this conversation between Ramel and Bandor is really significant.
Yeah.
Because number one, Bandor has been saying this whole time, I want to be a great warrior like my brother and like Prince Lotor.
Right.
And they're standing there talking, and you know, this is in Golion, this is after Ramel has been part of Lotor's harem for months. And she just very calmly and kind of she sounds a little bit haunted when she says, Lotor is the worst person in the universe.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, oh, God, what happened to her? I mean, we pretty much know, but still, that was disturbing.
Right. And at the same time on the Voltron side, I mean, they're just basically watching the glowing planet Eris up in the sky. And Bandor talks about how by tomorrow they will have conquered it. And Lotor promised Bandor he could have his own castle after Avik defeats Voltron. And Ramel at that point says, well, you can't believe everything Lotor says.
Yeah, yeah, there is a hint of it there.
Yeah.
But the other aspect of that, in Golion, there is no talk at all of Prince Samson turning back into a human.
Right.
It from the beginning when his dad says, I offer my son, our greatest warrior, it's a one-way trip.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a suicide mission for him. The best case scenario is that he lives the rest of his life as a giant monster.
Wow. What a life.
Yeah. But Samson is all for it.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, yeah, I'm going to be helping out my people. I'm going to be gaining lots of glory and renown and, you know, okay, so I'm basically going to die.
Uh-huh.
But that's all right.
And when you look at the title of this on the Voltron side, it's My Brother's a Robeast. You know, can you imagine, you know, at all the royal, you know, celebrations and stuff like that? Oh, see that 100-foot guy over there? That's my brother. Yeah. Isn't he great?
He has his own table.
Yeah. All right. Well, as they're talking in the hallway, they hear the Voltron force. So Bandor sneaks up on Pidge with his sword and tells Pidge he better start talking. And as the princess comes to see if Pidge is all right, Ramel comes to see what's happening, and they come face to face for the first time and see how closely they resemble each other. It's like looking in the mirror. Hunk says Ramel looks like Alora's twin sister. Bandor tries to take them all as his prisoners, but Hunk knocks him down, and as the sword hits the wall, well, we see Hagar's cat again.
Freaking cat.
So the princess says to Ramel, there must be peace, and it has to start here. Pidge looks out the window and sees that they're being surrounded. And as a firefight erupts in the castle, the Voltron force escapes into the lions and readies for battle. The Drool forces release the Avik Robeast. And this is one of those few rare talking Robies, because we actually see him talk. He has a double-ended sword that he spins around, and he's able to knock Blazing Sword out of Voltron's hand. Voltron forms its shield and sends it at Avik, knocking his sword out. Then they face each other in hand-to-hand, and Avik throws Voltron on his back. And as he grabs Voltron's head, Voltron sends fire from the mouth right at Avik. Voltron gets up. They battle through the castle wall and roll into the water. Voltron hits Avik with the Argon Force Field. Never seen that move before. So,
yeah, it's it's an electromagnetic pulse, basically, in Golion. Or at least that's how they refer to it.
What I didn't understand was they're both standing in the water. If he sends an electromagnetic pulse, they're both going to get shocked, aren't they?
Oh, that's...
It doesn't work that way?
Look, clowns.
Well, Lotor sees Avik is stunned and tells his forces to destroy both of them. He's just not a very patient leader at this point. Avik gets hit hard, and Rumel starts going towards him, saying, "He's swimming out to sea." And she gets stopped by Drool soldiers as they take her to Lotor's ship. She screams, "I hate Lotor!"
Yeah, there was no swimming out to sea in Golion for that poor guy.
Yeah, I'm imagining this was completely different in Golion.
It was, man, it was brutal. Because it wasn't Voltron, really, that did in Prince Samson as the Robeast. It was Lotor's fighter ships. And they come swarming at him, and they actually shoot out his eyes.
Uh-huh.
Like, he's blinded, and he falls down, takes a bunch more hits, and actually does begin to transform back into a human for about 3/10 of a second.
Before he dies.
Before he explodes.
Yeah.
So, a little sanitization going on there for the American release. There's no more Prince Samson.
Right. So, Bandor starts going after Rumel, but they clip him in the leg with a blaster. Now, that happens in both of them, right?
It does, yeah. But before that happens in Golion, Rommel's father is furious at Lotor, and he runs over and jumps into this artillery emplacement, this big mounted stationary cannon, and doesn't even get a shot off before those fighter ships come in and blow him up.
Yeah, so now there's two main characters are completely dead.
Yeah. Yeah, bad day for Rommel's family.
Yeah. Well, and then we're going to have to look at this at the end again, because there's another part that has to do with that. As Lotor's ship is getting away, Voltron goes after it and punches a hole in Lotor's ship with Red Lion. As the ship starts to fall apart, Lotor takes Rommel into an escape ship, a smaller ship, and blasts away to Planet Doom. But Lotor claims he doesn't have enough fuel to return to Doom and will have to land on Arrus. So that's a strange part right there.
I'm not sure where they were going with that.
Yeah, he doesn't have enough fuel. I mean, it's a ship specifically made so that he can escape from the bigger ship, right?
Well, plus it doesn't go anywhere because, you know, the next episode comes around and I was expecting, I was thinking, I don't remember seeing them on Arrus, but okay, but no.
Yeah, this whole part is just very confusing.
I think like just looking at it from a writer's perspective, it seems to me like they had some sort of plan, some sort of thing they were going to do with the next episode or maybe an episode down the road, and they were trying to set this up.
Mm-hmm.
And then that didn't work out. For whatever reason.
It was picture perfect for a two-part episode.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Not sure about that. But we do end up back on Pollux. Bandor's thinking that he will never see Rommel again. And the Voltron Force are there with him. And Princess Allura reassures him that he will. She says Lotor will probably land on Eris and will exchange Ramel for repairing his ship. Or just giving him fuel, whichever he needs. And Keith says, come along, we're going to get to Eris before Lotor. Bandor says life will be nicer now that our planets are friendly again. So just one kid's reassurance that the planets are friendly again is going to get rid of that whole, you know, centuries-long grudge?
Yeah, I guess maybe the whole point of the landing on Eris thing is just so that they could plant in the audience's mind that Romel is ultimately going to be okay. But in Golion, you actually see Bandor kneeling over the graves of his father and brother.
Right. You don't see any graves at all in Voltron.
Right. And it's not like we're gonna go exchange this for Romel and get her back safely. It's you want to get her back, right? Then cooperate with us. Join us. We'll take on Zarkon. And it's, you know, it's not a question of, oh, our planets are friendly again. It's now they have a common enemy.
Right. So, yeah, like we said, we thought we were going to go into another episode based on this. We would see Ramel again. We would see Bandor again, but that was not to be.
Nope.
All right, so that completes that episode, and now we're going to move to episode 18.
Voltron will be back after these messages. And now, back to Voltron, Defender of the Universe.
Episode 18 on the Voltron side was called Zarkon is Dying, and in the Goal Line, it's called Footsteps in the Forest of Fear. So the alliteration there is pretty foreboding. Anyway, it starts off and we're seeing Lotor visiting a witch that it's not Hagar. It's a different witch. He calls her Zandra, and she's preparing a potion that she promised for Lotor. She demonstrates it by putting a few drops on a flower, and it turns into like a man-eating beast. And Lotor is even slightly afraid of it, that he knocks it over. So it's an effective potion, it looks like.
Yeah, there's that whole sequence, you know, in the Voltron. Well, number one, in Golion, that's not a woman. That's a guy.
With long hair.
A guy with long hair. He's not even ever named. He's just kind of like drool scientist number 12.
Well, I have to admit, he is pretty gruesomely ugly, okay?
That he is. But, you know, in Voltron, he's got that solution, and Lotor says, oh, what's that? And the witch Zandra, with the female-sounding voice that the American production gave him, you know, says, oh, I made this from Eye of Newt and Toe of Frog and blah, blah, blah. In Golion, he says, oh, yeah, this is brain fluid extract from some Robeasts.
Yeah, I don't think they wanted to say that in the Voltron for the kids.
So, let me pour some Robeast brain juice on this plant and see what it does.
Well, she says to Lotor, your enemies will never suspect plants can be turned into hideous beasts. She says she thinks it's way better than what Hagar could do, and she hopes you'll bring all your evil business to her. So apparently there's this, in the Voltron version, there's this a little bit of a competition between the witches.
Yeah. And, you know, the witchcraft there, well, actually, I was going to say the witchcraft seems to be very much tied in with science. But there's definitely a scene coming up in this episode that has little to do with science.
Right. Well, as they're talking about the potion, suddenly Lotor is summoned to attend to his father, who has become very ill. Lotor and Hagar are with the king, and a guard says the royal physicians are here. Hagar says she doesn't need them. Her magic will take care of Zarkon. Hagar begins to call upon the dark spirits. Well, the beads tell her Lotor must give him a magic medicine from a berry that grows only on planet Eris. Now, this is really different from what happens in Golion, right?
Oh, man. Number one, the whole, like, Hagar goes into, she performs this big ritual, dancing around this this altar, and the altar bursts up into these, like, red flames, and she's incanting. And in Voltron, she makes reference to, like, evil spirits. But in Golion, she's a little bit more specific, and she's praying to, as she puts it, the god of Galra.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, once she does her little divination thing and looks at the pattern of the beads on the floor, kind of like reading chicken bones or something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's not berries. She says, she says, if you're going to cure King Zarkon, you need to get the blood of a human girl.
Yeah. First of all, it's blood. Second of all, it's from a human. And third, it's
and it
from
has
a girl.
To be a girl. And this, you know, of course, I'm kind of twisted, so this raised another question in my mind, because you know, Lotor or Sincline says, well, there aren't any human girls available here. I'll have to go to Eris. And I was thinking, oh, crap, what happened to his harem?
What happened to the slaves?
Well, I mean, they're all there. He likes human girls.
Yeah.
And he keeps them around. And so, you know, well, he doesn't have any available. So I don't want to go down that road.
Yeah, well, in Voltron, they make it pretty clear he has to go to Eris to get the berry.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, all right. So as Lotor is waiting for his robot troops, Zandra appears with a vial of the potion and says, with a few drops of it, you'll have your own army. So Lotor leaves for Eris. On Eris, the Voltron force are helping to build a new school. Allura takes some of her handmaidens with her into the forest to gather fruit for lunch. They're not building a school in Golion, are they?
As I recall, they're building a home for war orphans.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Which seems like a more useful thing at the time, you know.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, I can see why they would say it was a school, too. But basically, Keith and Pigeon, the guys, are saying, oh, we'll have this done by the time you get back. In Golion.
And, you know, they say pretty much the same thing in both episodes, and that would be a neat trick, because all they have up is, like, a skeletal structure of this building.
It's like, what are you going to get all the Amish people to help you? Yeah, so... All right, Lotor is close by, though, because, you know, he needs his berries. And he ends up turning some trees into his own monsters.
Yeah, he has a squirt cannon on his ship there. Yeah. He blasts out that the solution, the Robeast brain juice solution,
right,
onto some trees, and it turns them into tree beasts.
Right. And there's, like, three of them. And all of a sudden, the trees surround the women, and they all scream in horror. So the rest of the Voltron force see a flock of birds circling above the area where the women are, and they know it means trouble.
To me, it looked like it was a little bit more than just a flock of birds. I mean, it looked to me like there were sort of like these evil, dark purple-gray clouds swirling around that portion of the forest.
Okay.
Because in Golion, the guys just say, essentially, holy crap, there's something wrong down there.
Well, okay, so Hunk, Lance, and Keith go after the girls while Pidge stays behind with the boys from the school. And in the forest, the trees are attacking the women when Lotor stops them to see who they've captured. Princess Allura orders him to call off the creatures and leave the planet at once. Yeah, she's in a position to do that.
Yeah.
Well, Keith ends up swinging in on a vine and knocks down Lotor. And Hunk and Lance are also swinging in on vines and picking up the ladies and taking them to safety.
Man, that's one of the few times where you get to see Lotor really just absolutely cold cocked.
Yeah.
Because Keith comes in, drives him head first into the trunk of a tree.
Yeah, he didn't see that coming.
He spends a good minute and a half just limp as a rag doll.
And it was one of those things where I have to pull in a line from a Star Wars movie that people don't like. I don't care what universe you're from. That's gotta hurt.
Yeah. And like he's standing on a branch when Keith drives his face into the tree and he collapses onto the branch. And then we cut away to the guys trying to rescue the girls and succeeding. Cut back to Lotor. He's still lying there on the branch and just sort of slides off and thumps on the ground.
Yeah, that one took him
and,
for a loop.
Like in Voltron, he grunts, you know, and like lets you know that he's still breathing. But in the Go Lion, he looks like he might be dead at that point.
If this was a Looney Tunes episode, you would have seen stars circling around his head.
Right, right.
All right, so Lotor sends the plant beasts after them. And as they run back to the lions, Pidge is already in Green Lion to hold off the beasts. Pidge is taking a beating from the plants when the other lions arrive and start attacking back. Lance thinks he can burn them, but Lotor has them combine into one massive tree beast.
Yeah, and it has a name in Go Lion.
What is it?
It's Treeder. You know, they tend to name the roe beasts in Go Lion. Yeah, that one was Treeder.
Okay.
Not the most menacing name ever, but no. You know, it was a decently menacing roe beast.
Reminds me of what they named it in Lord of the Rings, the Two Towers, Treebeard.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Keith orders his magma missiles and they stun the beast in the eyes. Hunk shoots one into the mouth. Pidge hits the eyes with the macro darts, and it only makes it mad, and it grabs Green Lion. Princess fires Blue Claw, and it doesn't work, and she gets caught too. Lotor thinks he has them beat, but Lance and Keith have a plan to get Princess and Pidge out. Lance takes Red Lion underground and digs right up underneath the beast, lifting him until Black Lion can knock him down. This frees Green and Blue Lions so that they can form Voltron.
You know, it was an interesting little bit there. In Voltron, it was Keith who comes up with this idea. He's like, hey, let's try this old trick where you get down and block his legs and I'll knock him over you. And Lance then burrows, you know, uses the heat from the lion's mouth to burn a tunnel that he can come up underneath the roe beast.
Right.
But in Go Lion, it was Lance's idea entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And he just said, hey, I got an idea. Follow my lead.
Right.
It's interesting to see the American productions, sort of insistence on giving Keith all the best ideas.
I think, well, you know, he's the commander.
He is the commander. You know? He is the commander. But, you know, and I wonder if that's like part of the Japanese sensibility, letting everybody on the team have a say, letting everybody on the team have a moment to shine.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, makes me think about the ideal outcome of a Japanese baseball game, which is a tie.
Okay.
You know, if everybody does what they're supposed to do, You're going to have a tie.
Right.
And that's perfect. That's perfect.
Right. That means everything was perfect.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, at this point, Voltron comes down on the beast. It grabs Voltron's feet and throws him around twice, landing him hard on his back. And at that point, Keith says Voltron's running low on stored energy. Hunk and Allura use fire blasters to get free of the beast's grip. Then Voltron forms Blazing Sword, then with one giant leap, cuts the tree in half from the top down.
Timber!
that's what I was waiting for. Yeah. If a tree falls in the forest, does it make a sound? Yes. Decidedly so. This one exploded.
Yeah.
So Lotor retreats back to Doom once again. And on Doom, he sees Zandra, who asks how his mission went. He says it was a miserable failure. As Lotor is talking to her, he puts some cobra venom in the potion. He wants to force her to drink it, but she suggests he give it to his father and tell him it was the medicine.
Father, I've returned with the medicine.
My dear devoted son, I knew you wouldn't fail me.
No, my father. Now drink this quickly.
Wonderful. Just what I needed. A magic potion. I feel strong. Ready to take the throne again. And by the way, Lotor, if your medicine had happened to be poison, which of course it wasn't, it wouldn't work. Long ago, Hagar cast a magic spell upon me, which protects me from all such dastardly attempts on my life. So you see, you'll just have to be patient, my ambitious son. Zarkon will be on the throne for a long, long time.
A little bit of a difference here at the end there with Golion, right?
Wow, it's, yeah. Well, when Lotor goes back to the scientist, or when Sinclair rather does, number one, you get to see him slice the head off this snake. And they call it by a name. It's not a cobra. They call it a raid, R-A-D-E.
Mm-hmm.
Not that that's important.
Right.
But Sinclair really brings out his sadistic streak here, because the scientist hasn't really done anything wrong. The Lotor forces him to drink the snake venom anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And he dies like this sort of gruesome, twitching, prolonged on-screen death.
Yeah.
And Sinclair watches this calmly, and then he's like, okay, yeah, that'll work. But there's the difference that I appreciated most in this episode, and the one that I thought was much creepier, in the Golion episode. In Voltron, Lotor gives Zarkon the juice, and Zarkon drinks it, and he hops up and says, oh, I feel great. That was perfect. That was exactly what I needed. And you know, not that you tried to poison me, but if you had, it wouldn't have worked. But in Golion, there's no mention of that at all. Sinclair comes in, gives his dad the potion. King drinks it, does the same thing, pops up and says, oh, hey, it worked. I feel great.
Thank you.
and Sinclair is just left sitting there thinking, I just gave you deadly poison and you liked it. And I'm like, but well, what do I do now? What are you anyway?
What are you, the devil?
Not only does it, Sinclair's a lot more frustrated, but it makes the audience wonder, what's up with Zarkon? I mean, what is this guy that, chugging deadly snake venom would cure him of this mystery ailment?
Yeah, and what was that mystery ailment?
Yeah.
Can you get it to happen again?
And I just thought it lent the king a much greater air of mystery, which I appreciated.
Okay. All right, well, that completes that episode. And now we're on to an episode where I think there aren't hardly as many differences between Golion and Voltron, and I think it has a lot to do with the fact that there's three Erujian kids in this one.
Right.
Voltron will be back after these messages. And now, back to Voltron, Defender of the Universe.
The Voltron title is The Buried Castle. The Golion title is The Mystery of Ghost Castle. So as we start out here, three Arusian kids are exploring the woods for buried treasure when the ground starts shaking, and after it stops, they see a castle that wasn't there before. The kids decide to check it out. The Voltron Force sees it on the scanner, knowing it just appeared out of nowhere. So Karan puts it through the computer. Computer tells of a castle that was buried during the robot wars. The castle contained valuable treasures, but evil powers as well. Many came to find the treasure, but it caused so much harm, the kings decided to bury it for good. So is there any difference in the Golion story on that?
Yeah, and the Golion story is actually a lot simpler. Mysterious robot wars. It was just the king that lived there was that, well, they referred to him as eccentric. Mm-hmm. And of course that's what you call crazy people when they're rich. he decided that when he died, he wanted to be buried in his castle, and he wanted his castle to be buried along with him. So, you know, no wars, not really any big conflict or mystery, just a crazy king who wanted his castle to become his tomb.
Can you imagine what it would be like on Earth if people had that wish as their dying wish to be buried with their home?
Well, I mean, it got kind of close to that with ancient Egypt. You know, they didn't have their homes buried with them, but they had, the pharaohs were buried with all of their possessions and all of their servants and, you know, all their pets and lots of, I think, livestock. If you were a servant of a pharaoh, you better hope that he lived a long time.
Yeah, but I mean, to imagine that there would be all these helicopters full of dirt just to dump dirt on top of a house.
Right. Doesn't seem like the most efficient way to move dirt.
Yeah. All right. Well, Pidge decides that he could be the one to find the treasure. Lance tells him finding buried treasure only happens in old fairy tales. Keith tells him there could be danger. Princess says, if you go, take the mouse with you because he wants to go too. The mouse climbs on his shoulder and he reminds the mouse that he's in charge.
Well, this is actually a significant difference, because in Golion, it's not really, there's not really a question of treasure, because they refer to it as Ghost Castle. And mm-hmm. There's very much a question of, you know, is it haunted?
Right.
And Pidge is curious, but I think it's Keith who says, well, tell you what, Shorty, you go check it out. And if it's interesting or if you need help or something, then we'll show up.
Right.
And Shorty, or Pidge, doesn't really want to go. I mean, he doesn't want to admit that he doesn't want to go, but he's not really hot on the idea. And he looks around and sees Platt, the mouse, and he says, hey, why don't you come with me? And then they start, everybody else starts making fun of him for not wanting to go alone because he's scared.
At least a mouse is better than nothing.
Right. Right. Well, yeah. That's a bad mouse.
At least it's somebody he can talk to.
But, you know, it all winds up the same because Pidge and the mouse do head off toward the castle.
Right. So he heads out in Green Lion, lands on the edge of the forest, and they walk toward the castle with the mouse. As Pidge is walking, he runs into the kids, who are very scared. Pidge suggests they team up to find the buried treasure in the castle. Meanwhile, Hagar and her cat are there at the castle to trap whoever comes in.
Freaking cat!
When they get in the castle, they find a treasure chest full of coins, gold, rubies, and diamonds. Then Pidge and the mouse hear and see Hagar's cat. And they know that this is a trap. So they run out, but Hagar's witchcraft turned their weapons into snakes and frogs, and their feet are grabbed by bony hands. Then as they're being held, they're turned upside down to hang. Then they're guided by a beam over to the large bell hanging in the tower of the castle and made to hang there. The mouse goes to get help and Hagar lets it go because she wants to trap every member of the Voltron force. So the mouse tells the princess that Hagar has trapped Pidge and the children. The team gets to their lines immediately. The team carefully enters, knowing it could be a trap. So Hagar makes spears and bony soldiers, like skeleton soldiers, jump out of the ground where they're standing. So even though Keith blasts them to bones with his blasters, they reform and come after him. Princess, Lance, and Hunk get inside, and she asks the mouse to take them to where Pidge and the kids are. Everything's pretty much the same on Golion at this point, right?
Yeah, yeah. Happens exactly that way.
Yeah. So they get caught in the same trap, you know. They're standing on the floor, and then all of a sudden the bony hands come out and grab them. Then they get pulled over to the bell, and then the bell rings with them in it.
That whole thing with the bell was so weird.
Yeah, it is. It is kind of weird. Now, while Keith is still fighting the skeleton warriors outside, Hagar calls her Robeast, a big monstrous one, out from under the ground to take the whole castle to Planet Doom.
Now that we've captured them, it's time to deliver them to King Zarkon. We'll take them castle and all.
I don't like the looks of this. What kind of Robeast is it? It's huge. It's attaching itself to the castle with steel ropes.
How did you imagine this happening with the Robeast taking a whole castle to Planet Doom? How did you envision this happening?
Well, not the way it actually happened.
Yeah.
Just because the Robeast fires out these about a dozen really big metallic cables that hook into the walls of the castle. And
right.
It lifts off and it actually pulls the castle as a whole up out of the ground, and I was thinking, wouldn't that just pull the walls apart?
Yeah, and I don't think it was structurally made to be picked up.
Yeah, I agree.
The other thing is I've seen them use tractor beams before.
Yeah.
So why didn't they just have a ship that had a tractor beam on it, you know, towing the castle to Planet Doom?
Well, because then we wouldn't have been able to see Keith climb one of those cables up toward the Robeast/spaceship.
Right. And then we wouldn't have been able to see, you know, what happens after that. But I'm getting to that. As he's climbing the steel ropes to somehow break them, Hagar calls Zarkon to tell him that the Voltron force is imprisoned in her castle, and he can do with them as he wishes when he gets to Doom. Drool ships are firing on Keith as he's trying to climb up the ropes, and he falls. But he falls right on top of a drool fighter, which he manages to take over and then crash land right in front of Black Lion.
Yeah, one small difference there. The action plays out exactly the same, but in Golion, Keith's language gets a good bit spicier than it does on Voltron, you know, because he's suspended hundreds and hundreds of feet above the ground and thinks he's about to die. So once they shoot him and he loses his grip, he has a few words to say that wouldn't make it on American television.
Okay. All right, so he gets in Black Lion and uses the mouth blade to cut all the cables holding the castle. The castle crashes to the ground, and with that, the Voltron force and the kids are able to break free. They head to the lions, despite the Robeast trying to burn them in their path. They form Voltron, and after several attempts to stop the Robeast, including Lion Lariat. That's a new weapon, Lion Lariat. They form a whirlwind around the Robeast. Voltron pulls out Blazing Sword, stabs the Robeast through the heart, and Keith actually says, brace for the explosion on this one. And it, of course, explodes.
I'm still trying to figure out how everyone in the castle survived falling from like half a mile in the air.
Well, they were stuck to a bell. The bell protected them.
It's like the refrigerator in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, I guess.
Yeah, now you know why the bell was so important.
But, you know, that is one fewer giant turtle Robeast to deal with at this point.
Yeah. All right, so Hagar flies back to Doom, dumbfounded that Voltron keeps winning. And Pidge gets his treasure hunters in line, military style, and they say he was the treasure they found. And they all hug him.
Aww.
So that was pretty much an episode where, once again, we find Hagar and the cat on Arras.
Yeah, they just hang out there.
Yeah, so we're wondering if I think you had mentioned before that she has a timeshare there.
Yeah, she got a really good price on a timeshare on Harris.
Okay, well, that episode wasn't as involved an episode, I think, as pretty much some of these other episodes have been.
Right.
So now we're going to come to our final episode that we're reviewing for this week, and it's a tough one. It's a tough one to take. So I wanted to say at the beginning of this one that this episode is one of those pivotal episodes in the whole series that might get your goat if you let it. It's a very powerful episode that leaves a bad taste in your mouth because you're a Voltron fan and makes you question some of the characters and the decisions they make at certain times. Would you agree?
Definitely, yeah. But, you know, the decisions, well, and it's not really decisions so much as opinions.
Yeah.
And it very much highlights the fact that Allura is royalty. And as far as some of the citizens of Arras are concerned, royalty and commoners really shouldn't mix too much.
Yeah.
Voltron will be back after these messages. And now, back to Voltron, Defender of the Universe.
All right, so this is episode 20, and the Voltron, it's called Pidge's Home Planet. In Go Lion, it's called Goodbye Earth. You can probably get a sense just right from the titles. It's a big difference in this one.
Yeah, and just a little bit of backstory that was just, you know, almost everyone listening to this is familiar with the whole series, but just in case anybody listening isn't, in the pilot episode of Go Lion, our intrepid space explorers return to Earth and find the entire planet devastated by a third massive world war. That's what prompts them to head off into space.
Right.
So just to bear that in mind, given the events of this episode.
They were space explorers because their planet had been devastated.
Right.
So, all right, at the beginning of this episode, we're watching the Voltron Force, Princess Allura, Nanny, and Karan talking about Allura's coronation as the Queen of Arras, including the crown her father wore and a gown she would be wearing. Nanny reminds her that before the coronation can take place, Allura needs to choose a prince consort. Karan says the people of Arras are anxious for Allura to have an heir to the kingdom after her. Karan says it must be someone suitable. Allura thinks about it. She'd have to leave her friends on the Voltron Force. Pidge says no more blasting off in a line for Her Majesty. Nanny says she needs to settle down the things that she associates with and looks at the guys. Well, they take offense at this remark. She adds, zooming around in the sky is no occupation for a princess. She needs to be surrounded by people of culture. one comment after the other is just riling these guys up.
What are we, space bums?
She should associate with people of her class.
Okay, I think we get the message.
Well, how about us? We get a handshake, thanks a lot, and goodbye? No gold star. Could we ask for a letter of recommendation?
Are we really all washed up here?
Yeah, and, you know, Nanny is pretty straightforward with her opinions, but that is nothing compared with how strong she comes across in Golion. Because the guys are asking, well, who's your prince going to be? And Nanny starts to say, among you four, and they're all like, what? She's going to say it's one of us. But Nanny finishes up by saying, none of you would make a suitable prince.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you know, come on now. But she keeps at it. And she says, seriously, you're all just drifters.
Yeah.
She calls them drifters from Earth. And I mean, she's just like looking down her nose at them. It's really overt.
Yeah. And the whole thing is that Nanny herself isn't royalty. She works for royalty.
Right.
Okay. And I don't get where she comes off having this idea that she's even better than these guys.
I think she thinks of herself as Allura's surrogate mother.
Yeah.
So she's like looking out for her baby girl's best interest.
Right. Well, Lance wants to know what their place is in all of this, and Nanny suggests they could be royal escorts. As the princess walks down the aisle in the arm of her handsome prince consort, they could be the princess's honor guard, following behind, ever faithful to her majesty. You will kneel and pledge undying allegiance to the queen. What an honor and a privilege for simple commoners like you. Wow. I mean, I can't even believe these guys are still standing there at this point. It's just like, oh man, do I really have to listen to all this? Well, what kept them from wringing Nanny's neck, I'll never know, but it's like Aris has always been peaceful and never brought to ruin by Zarkon and the Drool forces. Nanny is smoking some serious denial here, and I, for one, want to know who's dealing it to her.
Well, but, the question of Allura's marriage has never come up before.
Right.
And, Nanny has some serious prejudice going on. You know, yeah, she's fine with these guys risking their lives to save her planet, but marry Allura? No, 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 that's not acceptable.
Well, Allura says she has no plans on marrying to become queen.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember which version it is where she says it, but she says, I've never even given any thought to marrying.
Yeah, and Hunk says, hey, Nanny and Karan will tell her when she's getting married, and she doesn't have a choice. That's what he's saying. They're going to tell you what to do, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, that's the same in Golion.
So he's afraid they'll break up the Voltron force. And Karan's saying it's the people who want this. They have a right to demand a queen, and they want an heir to the throne. So with Karan hiding behind the whole people thing, Keith says, oh, I understand, and they leave. The princess has her job to do, and so do we. So the Force, minus Allura, return to the control room, and they program a universal scan. And I watch as radioactive missiles head for planet Balto, Pidge's home planet. Massive explosions are hitting the planet, and they want to know who's doing it. They speculate it's probably Zarkon. This isn't exactly Balto in Golion.
No, that is Earth. That is poor, picked-on planet Earth that was already devastated by a global war. And now, I don't think they said, oh, those are missiles. They just said something bad is happening to Earth. Something like, I was under the impression that it was like maybe a swarm of meteors.
Yeah, so they didn't see them as radioactive missiles in Golion.
I don't think so. I don't think so. They just saw that there was some sort of catastrophe happening there. And so, they all say, we need to go back there. Maybe there are some survivors.
Right. And this, for them, it's all of them. This is their home planet.
Yeah.
Even though it had been devastated in the World War and everything, this is their home planet. They want to see what they can do for it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in Voltron, we're only talking about Pidge's home planet, but the rest of them, you know, are so, you know, such strong friends of Pidge that they want to help him in any way they can. So Pidge wants to do something or the planet will be lost. Hunk says they'll destroy everything just to take the inhabitants as slaves. If it's Zarkon, that is. So Pidge says his family was moving to another planet and he doesn't know if they made it. He wants to go right away, and Hunk says, yeah, we stopped them here. We can stop them there, too. So as they go, Princess comes in and tells them to stop. She says, if you leave us without Voltron. Hunk says Pidge's planet is in big trouble, but Karan has a detachment of armed soldiers surround them to keep them from leaving. Keith asks Karan if he's threatening them. Karan says they will not jeopardize Aris's security. So these guys fight off the guards and turn to leave, but Allura steps in front of them. And then here comes one of the biggest emotional scenes you'll see.
Keith! I'm sorry.
Yeah. You know we have to go.
Keith! Come on, there's no time!
They're coming back.
I plan to, but without you, we won't have the Blue Lion and Voltron, so who knows?
Keith! It won't be the same.
This is a tough thing. I mean, here they are. They're basically the saviors of Aris. You know, they're the Voltron force. They can form Voltron. They've saved Aris on many occasions, but yet Karan is still, you know, not letting them do what they should do.
Well, this is one of my favorite episodes, just because in this situation, I can see both sides of the argument.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the guys have just been deeply offended. And on the heels of that, they find out that Earth is suffering some kind of catastrophe that maybe they could do something for. But they never consider getting to Earth any other way. And, you know, I'm not sure what the status is of Arusian spacecraft at that point. I guess they don't have any others that could make an interstellar journey.
Right.
But Karan is right. If they take off in the Lions, Aris is defenseless.
This is true.
And yeah, you know, they're doing something that is very personally important to them, but he's making a decision that's important for the whole planet. So, you know, everyone is at fault here.
Yeah. And in this case, we're talking about the title of the show is Voltron, Defender of the Universe.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, Karan is saying, no, I only want it to be the defender of Aris. So I think there's a little bit of selfishness going on there for Karan. But I see where he's coming from. But I still think that, you know, if Zarkon and the Drool armies are attacking another planet, shouldn't they be able to try to defend that planet?
Well, yeah. Yeah, but, you know, there's not a good answer. There's not a good answer for it because, you know, Karan's responsibility is to Aris. And even though Keith and the guys are the pilots, they didn't bring those lions with them. Those lions were on Aris to begin with. So, yeah, there's not a good solution here. And, you know, as we'll talk about very shortly, the Drools become aware that the Lions are leaving Aris just immediately.
Yeah. As the team takes off in the Lions, there are exploding missiles all around them. And the team is sort of like joking sarcastically that they're getting a hero's farewell.
Well, because Karan says, I don't blame them for going. Give them a military salute.
Yeah. But they all think it's ridiculous that they're being fired at after all they've done for Eros.
Well, and in Go Lion, that's no military salute.
Yeah.
Because Karan says, we have to keep them from leaving. Damage them if you have to. So they are actively trying to shoot the Lions down.
Yeah. This just gets worse and worse.
It does.
It does. It really does. I don't know if I'd want to come back to Nanny and Karan again. You know?
Yeah, I think their relationship going forward would be fundamentally changed.
Yeah. Well, the scene changes to Planet Doom, and on Doom, Zarkon and Lotor watch a monitor that shows the Lions heading to Balto. Zarkon says, one small planet attack and they run to their rescue? Lotor says they'll run into trouble at Balto. Hagar says she'll plan her capture of Eris and wants assurance they won't return. Zarkon gives her that assurance since they're separated and can't form Voltron. Lotor will see that they are totally destroyed on Balto. His entire fleet heads to Balto. As the Lions approach Balto, the team tells Pidge to brace himself for what they'll see. Pidge says he's ready for it. I can't imagine they said that on Go Lion.
Well, no, they were commenting on how it looked like the entirety of the oceans had been replaced with magma.
Oh.
You know, the Earth has become incredibly tectonically unstable. But I did like it that it's very clear that even though several members of the team are Caucasian, all of their homes are in Japan. I mean, it's very clear that they're all going back to Japan.
Because they're
right there at the, I think they called it the Mount Fuji School, where they apparently attended.
Right, right.
In fact, they mentioned that all of their homes are near there, which would imply that these guys were all neighbors. You know,
uh-huh.
Who knows how long they've known each other. They may have been childhood friends.
Right. Right, so from the Voltron perspective, from the first look that they get of the planet, it appears the whole planet was wiped out. They start looking for signs of anyone who needs help, and Hunk and Pidge are crying as they see Pidge's old school destroyed. As they check the inside of the buildings, they can't believe an entire civilization is wiped out in one day.
They're inside that building, and I think it's Lance who says an entire civilization crumbled to dust. But in Go Lion, they go in and actually find some human remains. There's like a skeletal arm and hand that's just sort of lying propped up on the ground, and just them walking in, like the vibrations of their footsteps. That hand falls over and crumbles to dust.
And then he says something about how they were fighting each other. Why would they do that?
Right.
You know, like everybody on their own planet was fighting each other. And what's the sense in that?
Mm-hmm.
So, they run back to the Lions because Drool ships begin attacking. Lotor at this point is laughing because he knew an attack on one of their home planets would divide them so that he could conquer them.
I've divided the Voltron force, and now I'll conquer them. Launch the attack and make this a great day for Planet Doom.
The Lions fire proton missiles at attacking drill ships and are able to destroy some with electro lasers and rocket grenades and rotor missiles. Lotor wants to end it quickly, so he releases a Robeast with wings and a sonar beam. The Lions are blown apart. The princess on Eris can hear Keith talking about how five lions were meant to be together. She gets up to say she's coming, and Nanny and Karan try to talk sense into her. Princess says,
if it weren't for them, there'd be no Voltron, no kingdom, no planet Eris. We owe everything to them. If I've ever been needed, it's now, and by friends I love more than anything in the world.
So what do you think? Is she right?
Well, yeah. Yeah, and that's pretty much what happens in the Go Lion episode as well. It doesn't seem like she's actually hearing a transmission, though. It's like she's hearing Keith's voice in her head.
It's almost like they have a cosmic attraction. I don't want to get anybody out there in Keith and Allura land excited, but it's almost like they have a cosmic attraction.
Oh Lord, the longing looks in this episode between the two of them. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know when in an animated show I've seen nonverbal communication done so well.
Right.
Because it's obvious that Allura wants to say, Keith, I want you to be my prince.
Uh-huh.
And it's obvious that Keith wants to say yes and can't because his duty lies elsewhere.
Right.
Arg.
All right, so she leaves and entrusts Karan with the affairs of the kingdom if she doesn't return. And of course, I would have added, and if I do come back, you're both fired. That's what I would have said. So that was my own two cents. Sorry about that. So as Blue Lion travels to Balto, Lotor is watching her on his monitor, and he remarks how happy he is that she joined the party. And it saves him the trip of going after her at Eris after he destroys the Voltron Force. I'm like, hey, dude, maybe you should have disposed of them before she got there so that they couldn't form Voltron?
Well, yeah, but Lotor's never really been one for good planning.
Well, the rest of the Voltron Force is getting pummeled right now by that Robe Beast, and they get forced down a ravine. Keith says they really need the princess. Lance says it's not over till it's over. So the princess has arrived and starts firing on the Drool ships, knocking some of them out. And Lotor remarks about when she's angry, she's fascinating. It's going to be a shame to end it now. His ship fires a lightning net that disables Blue Lion. So Lance finds a volcano pit with molten lava and fires on it to force the volcano to blow, which shoots lava up towards Lotor's ship. This releases Blue Lion, and as the other lions emerge, they see the princess and they welcome her with open arms. Is anything different here from the Go Lion?
Well, no. There's a comment that comes in a little bit later.
Okay.
That references what Lance did, but no, that everything happens the same.
Okay. So then they form Voltron, and they say, Lotor, what do you have for us now? Lotor says, you'll be no match for the mightiest Robe Beast in the universe. Voltron forms Electro Sabers, and it has no effect. The Robe Beast fires back a force field ray. Lotor thinks Voltron is finished. Well, the volcano erupts again, knocking the Robe Beast back and freeing Voltron. Voltron forms Blazing Sword, sends a starfire blast at the Robe Beast, destroying it, splitting it apart completely.
Yeah, there were a lot more Robe Beast body parts falling into lava than I was expecting to see.
Yeah, and they actually showed that in Voltron too, didn't they?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think they wanted to make sure that we understood that this Robe Beast is gone. Well, Lotor's men are telling him that they have to leave as the planet's about to blow. So the Voltron Force gets away quickly, and when they think they're at a safe distance, they watch in horror and tears as Pidge's home planet explodes. And this isn't where Balto explodes in Go Lion. This is Earth.
Oh yeah, it's definitely Earth. And it's at that point It's at that point when Lance says in horror, all I meant to do was make Mount Fuji erupt.
Yeah, well, it wasn't his fault.
He feels like it was, though. He feels like he put the straw on it was his action was the straw that broke the camel's back.
But he would have never been able to get away from the Roe Beast if he hadn't done that.
Right. And it didn't look like there was anybody left alive on Earth anyway.
Right. There wasn't anybody that they found.
Mm-mm.
So at this point, they are all shedding huge amounts of tears. And, you know, they're obviously thinking about their home world being destroyed. But in Voltron, it's Pidge. And they're all crying for Pidge and his home world. And Pidge says, well, at least he can think of planet Eris as his home. So the princess says they'll make him an honorary citizen when they get back. And when they get back, they celebrate Pidge being a new citizen. Pidge asks the mice if he's too short to be a prime minister underneath the table. But that part never happens in Goat Lion.
No. And I think it's because they had to fill a little bit of time there just from cutting some of the like, for instance, they couldn't show the skeletal hand disintegrating.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that left a gap. Stuff like that leaves a little gap here and there. And that was a way to fill the gap.
Right.
But yeah, the Goat Lion episode ends. The guys are all crying. And I forget who it is. Makes the comment that they don't have a home at all now. They don't belong anywhere. And Allura tells them, I want you to think of Eris as your home. You have a home. I'm officially saying this.
Yeah, and it's sort of her way of making up for what Nanny and Karan had said to them earlier.
But that's where it ends. That's, you know, it ends with them on the way back to Eris.
Right. You never get to see them confront Nanny and Karan.
No, and what a conversation that would be.
Yeah, and I have this strange feeling that everything's going to be back to normal again in the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it's never going to get explained. But this stuff is in the back of both Karan and Nanny's mind all the time.
Yep.
And they just put up with these guys.
Yeah. They put up with these guys because they're good for Eris.
Yeah. But they're not good enough to be royalty, right. Obviously. And obviously royalty rules over everything, so yeah. So there we are. We finished up another four episodes that we reviewed tonight. So we want to thank you guys for listening to Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast. And is there anything you want to leave us with here, Dan?
I don't know. Buy Dying Light.
How about if you send me the information about where they can get Dying Light and on what platforms it's on? Do you know what platforms it's on?
Yeah, it's for the PC, the Xbox One, and the PS4.
Okay.
And you can download it, I know, from the PlayStation Network. And if you're in North America, you can already get physical copies pretty much anywhere video games are sold.
Okay. All right, so we'll post that on the notes page. For the podcast. And I wanted to also mention to everybody that you didn't hear the Orange FM at the beginning of this podcast because we are no longer with the Orange FM podcast network. We are on our own. So we are using a system called Simplecast, and we're basically independent.
I'm independent.
Yeah? Me too. I'm... whatever you said. Independent.
All right.
So at this point, I'd like to say, thank you for listening to us again. And we'll see you next time on
Let's Voltron.